Welcome everyone to the call. I'm going to go ahead and pass it to Gloria to get it started.
Hello everyone. I'd like to welcome you to today's Nationwide Instant Impact Team Teleconference. My name is Gloria Berthold-Larkin, and I'm president of TargetGov, but more importantly, for this call, I am the National Procurement Co-Chair for Women Impacting Public Policy. Along with my co-chairs, I would like to welcome you to this teleconference as well as the live meetings that are being held in Northern California, Ann Arbor, Chicago, and Houston. If I may ask you to star 6 for anyone who's online right now so that you can mute your line, that would be terrific. Because of the size of the call and the number of attendees we have today, we will mute all the lines until the very end of the call when we will open them up for questions. So please jot down your questions as they come to mind so that you'll be able to ask our speakers what is important to you. For the past several weeks, Women Business Owners Nationwide have been submitting comments for the Women's Procurement Program. This call is of extraordinary importance in discussing the status of this program and what the situation is as we move forward. So far, 714 comments have been made to date. And what we will do is focus on a special briefing by Ann Sullivan, who leads WIPP's Government Relations team. She will update us on the significance of the program and the proposed rule and our next steps. To introduce Anne, we'd like to welcome Laura Boyd. Laura, we'd like to introduce you as WIPP's Nationwide Instant Impact Team Program co-chair and owner CEO of Policy and Performance Consultancy. Laura, I'd like to hand it over to you.
Thank you, Gloria, very much, and welcome also to all of you who are on this call. As the co-chair of the Instant Impact Teams, I want to take just a moment to talk to you about how important your participation is in these calls, as well as in responding to the outreach from headquarters for input, the 700-some comments that we've received, the various surveys we do to plan content, plan our goals, plan how we're going to focus all of the energy for women business owners in WIPP. Your perspective is that is on the ground, that is so very important to us. We want to be able to represent you nationally, but we also want to know on a day-by-day basis, on a week-by-week basis, those things that you find very successful and those things about which you struggle. So the way that we get to maximize our legislative strength and power in Washington is by engaging you in the many industries that you are involved in, engaging you in the many local areas where you currently work. The diversity that you respond to and that you reflect back to us about income levels, about what's going on in your current states, allows us to work together. And with all of that, we want to help you become actively involved with your federally elected officials. It is those leaders in Washington who, as you know, are making major decisions that impact us on a day-to-day basis. So to make all of that happen, WIPP launched the Nationwide Instant Impact Team Program in 2007. And as of the end of 2009, we had 32 active Instant Impact Teams across the country. Through those teams, We're connecting you with each other, business women owners to business women owners in your local area. We have meetings such as today's call. We have them electronically and we have them in person. And the purpose of those meetings is to talk about legislation that is out there, to educate ourselves about issues that are impacting women who are small business owners. Collectively, then, we weigh all of this input to form WIPP's policy positions. And we offer training to help you deal with, respond to those factors impacting you, but also we will give you the training to work locally with representatives elected to your state and federal representatives. Our goal is that the Instant Impact team members are knowledgeable about problems, that you are have possible solutions, and that you become advocates for women business owners for WIPP in your local area. Through that, you then educate other business owners, your staff, you educate the staff of our federally elected officials in their district offices in your state, and you help us educate federally elected officials in Washington, D.C., letting them know as constituents about what is important to small business, where we struggle, and where we need their representation. Ultimately, this process not only fosters those working relationships between you, the business owner, with the staff at the federal offices, but you also are a part of this nationwide movement in WIPP that is carrying a message to Washington, D.C., and where we are a voice that is recognized as one that is respected, knowledgeable, active, and should be listened to. So I applaud you for participating. We hope that whether this is your first participation with a Instant Impact Team event or whether it's your 15th, we hope that you will stay active. I'd like to introduce Ann Sullivan at this point and let Ann take over this meeting. Ann is our WIPP government relations staffer, expert. She has been holding meetings not only quarterly as team meetings, but she's been very much a resource for us over and over again in terms of conference calls with various committees as we've moved forward. And as Gloria said, this meeting is hosted by the Procurement Committee and is going to focus on women's procurement program. Ann is the owner and president of Madison Services Group. She not only represents us, when I say in Washington, but if we break that down, she works with Congress, she works with the administration, and she works with federal agencies. As you're listening, if you have any questions you want to submit, you may do that as we go through email to Angeline at headquarters. If you would just email those questions to questions@wiff.org, then we can begin to process and line up those questions in the queue for time that might be available at the end. So please feel free to submit those questions. If we don't get a chance to answer all of them, then we will answer them back through the emails to all participants once this call has been completed. And with that, let me welcome you and turn this conversation over to you.
Thank you, Laura, for that wonderful introduction. Usually I come to you from Washington, D.C., but today I have the privilege of being in the Wells Fargo beautiful conference room here in Chicago, Illinois, with a bunch of my friends who I know, and those that I don't know right now will be my friends at the end of this meeting. Thanks especially to Francine Manilow and Lynn Sutton for arranging this in-person meeting. Let me just say that if you are a government contractor or you are interested in being a government contractor, you need to know the facts about what I'm about to tell you. I'm going to give you a little background on the Women's Procurement Program. for lo these many years, since 2000, Public Law 106554 was passed by the Congress and signed into law to establish a women's procurement program. And the reason was because the government was not meeting its 5% women-owned goal for women-owned companies. And we're talking about direct contracts with the government, not subcontracts. In 2007, the Bush administration proposed a rule that allowed contracting officers to restrict competition to women-owned businesses in only four categories and required agencies to find past discrimination again towards women businesses before they could even put a program like that in place. Frankly, WIP and women business owners all over the country found that an insult, fought it, won, and now we have a new program that's about to be rolled out. In March 2010, the SBA released a proposed program, which I'm going to explain to you, which allows the government, when implemented, to set aside contracts for women only to bid on in 83 industries. It's important to know that if this program does not expire, even if the government meets its goal, its 5% goal. In fact, that's just a start, in my opinion. Let's talk a little bit further about the program. As I said, it allows contracting officers to restrict competition in 83 categories. It's based on four-digit NAICS codes. Everybody on this call, NAICS codes are industry codes. I see a lot of people in Chicago shaking their head that know what NAICS codes are, and probably a lot of people on this call do. There are two categories of those 83 industries that you need to be aware of. In 45 industries, women-owned businesses were deemed to be underrepresented, and in 38 industries, they are substantially underrepresented. There's a distinction. In 45 categories, in the 45 categories that are underrepresented, the business has to show that it is economically disadvantaged in addition to being one of the 45 industries. In the 38 industries, and by the way, if you're interested, at least in Chicago, we have a handout with all the NAICS codes on them, and I think probably everybody in the country does. If you are part of the 38, if your industry is in the 38 industries and considered substantially underrepresented, you do not have to show any additional economic disadvantage. You have to be a small business according to the SBA size standards to be eligible. You have to be 51% owned and operated by women, managed by one or more women in order to qualify. And you have to certify that you are indeed woman-owned. So there's two ways to do that. One is it can be a third party that the SBA will approve. So that would be certifications like WeBank, NABOC, maybe, you know, there's a lot of different certifiers out there. The SBA will approve them, and if you have a certificate from them, that will be your certification. Or you can self-certify if you don't want to go that route. There are a number of documents, and I'm not going to go into it now, which you will need to show the agency and the contracting officer to show that you are indeed owned and operated by majority, 51%, by one or more women. I just want to go into a little bit of the economic disadvantage because I know everybody's probably interested in what that means. So remember I said if you're in the 45 category, you need to show economic disadvantage. Here's what that means. The personal income of women business owners for 2 years is less than $200,000 per year. That's your personal income. There's a special rule for S&C corporations that I won't go into, but you need to take a look at that. Corporate losses cannot be subtracted from your income, from your personal income. The fair market value of a woman business owner's total assets need to be less than $3 million, and that excludes retirement accounts. And your personal net worth is less than $750,000. That excludes your ownership interest in the business, your equity interest in primary personal residence, those are not considered in the $750,000 of personal assets. That's what's considered economic disadvantage. If you meet that, you can qualify for the program in the 45 categories, and the other 38, it doesn't matter what your personal assets are or what your income was. None of that matters. The government has determined that you were, in fact, discriminated against as an industry, and therefore you are eligible for the program in those 38 categories. Let me just talk a little bit about the importance of this. There's one other thing that I forgot to mention. The size of the contracts that will be eligible for this program is $5 million for manufacturing and $3 million for goods and services. So what that means is the contracting officer can only set aside competition for women only, up to $5 million for manufacturer and up to $3 million for other goods and services. I just want to add that I think that is incredibly low. And so we're working with some senators to try to get a bill introduced to make sure that cap is lifted, because I don't know when they put that in place, but it must have been a long time ago. $3 million is not very much for an IT contract, for example. So we're looking to change that, and I'll need all of your help to kick in and help me change that. Let me just talk about the importance of the rule and how women business owners can benefit. Well, right now we only have 3.4% of all contracting opportunities with the federal government. This is so important to be able to up that number. And that's why it's important to you. It's important because it limits your competition. Instead of competing with all of the small business community or even the whole business community, which is large and small, you will only be competing with other women-owned companies for this contract. So you're limiting the pool significantly, and that's why you need to pay attention. There are a lot of resources on federal procurement that you ought to know about that WIP has in place, so that you're not in this alone. I just want to mention, though, that what I've just described to you is a proposed program. So the SBA is now going to review all 714 comments that were submitted, and thank you to anybody who submitted the comments. And they're going to look to see whether or not what I just laid out for you, whether or not they ought to change anything to make the program better. So there may be some changes along the way when the final rule is rolled out. The program, or I call it the rule, but it's really the program. The final program will be announced, we think, in the last quarter of this calendar year, which for an agency, that's on a fast track. But they have to do things in a very deliberate manner. They have to review the comments. They have to read every one. And this SBA is really dedicated to make it as strong a program as it can be. So there may be some changes along the way, and we'll keep you posted. Let me just go into a few resources that WIP has for federal procurement. First of all, you know, we mentioned earlier in the this morning that the procurement committee is a vital part of understanding what's happening in the procurement world. So if you're not signed up for the procurement committee, you most definitely need to do that. We do monthly or bimonthly briefings where I go through a litany of everything that's happened on procurement that's important to you as a contractor or if you want to be a contractor. So sign up for that. We discuss policy. I lean heavily on the procurement committee to give me comments about what the effect of a law or a proposed rule has on a real business, and that really helps shape my recommendations on policy to the Congress and to the White House. There's also Give Me Five trainings, which I don't know if all of you know about that, but they're really incredible. They're webinars, and they go through, you know, the most basic federal procurement rules to much more sophisticated ones. And the program is called Give Me Five. If you go to the WIP website, you can access them. They're all webinars, so it, you know, you can access them at any time. And I encourage you to do that.
Who is it? I come in, there's putting stuff in Spanish.
I believe somebody doesn't have their phone muted. There will be a special Give Me Five course that will be conducted by WIP policy analyst Angeline Barrios on the proposed women's program that I just laid out for you. I encourage you to take advantage of that. It's going to take place July 14th, and it's open to all WIP dues-paying members. So take a look at those courses. They're always good for refreshing your knowledge, but they're also tremendous input in terms of contracting that you should take advantage of. And with that, I think we're going to open it up for questions. Angeline?
Thank you, Ann. So as Ann had mentioned, my name is Angeline Barrios. I am the policy analyst here at WIP, and what I'm going to do is there have been some questions that have been emailed to me prior to this meeting and as the meeting has gone along. And so what we're going to do is to facilitate a more effective Q&A, we are only going to take questions via email. So any questions you have, if you can email them to questions with an S at WIP.org, we will be able to collect them and answer them in the order that they have been received, I'm hoping that we have time to answer all of them. So with that, I will go ahead to our first question that I have. The first question I have, Anne, is, am I only limited to one certification? I know there are many different programs that the federal government has. Should I apply for all the certifications that I am eligible for?
You will only need one certification to be eligible for this program, and that's a woman-owned certification. So if you have an 8A certification, for example, that is showing economic disadvantage, but it doesn't show that you're woman-owned. So this one is unique in that you need to show that you're owned and operated by one or more women.
The second question I have is, does the income requirement include the spouse's income, or are you only looking at the women?
That's a little tougher to respond to, because it depends if you're in a community property state. And so depending on what the rules of the state are is whether or not that needs to be included. But let me just say that there's nothing more irritating to me than people asking me what my husband's assets are. So in our WIP comments, we said we do not believe that you should take the spouse's income into consideration, with the understanding that certain states have different rules with respect to that.
Thank you. The next question we have is, will the FBA recognize any individual state certifications?
And
actually,
oh.
I can ask.
No, this is a federal. Okay. This is a federal certification.
Okay.
Were you going to say something, Angeline?
I do know that yes, they have expressed that they may or may not. I do know that, like you said, it is a federal program. If it does mirror the federal program requirements, they will consider it, but it'll be one of those ones where they will announce it if they have accepted the state certification or not.
So my advice, I guess, to everybody on this call would be, you know, since you can self-certify, if you have a state certification and you can self-certify, that seems to be the winning formula to make sure that you're not grabbing additional certifications.
Thanks. And I have another question here. It says, once the program is enacted, may I start bidding on contracts right away, or do I have to wait until the certification process is complete?
They should have the certification process spelled out for you. in the final program, so you will be instructed on how that will happen. But in order for you to bid on an opportunity, the contracting officer has to first set it aside for the women-owned program. So that's really the kicker. The minute that the program goes into place and you've got your certification or you have the documents that you need to be self-certified, you're ready to go. But the key is, are the contracting officers ready to set aside contracts? And just on that note, that's one of my jobs, is to start putting pressure on Congress to pressure the agencies to start setting aside those contracts.
Thank you. The next question I have is the FBA considering the exclusion of the cost of materials for a construction contract?
The SBA is not... is not talking about the construction contract. I mean the structure of them. But we have somebody from Construction Owners. Do you?
We recommended that in our letter to the FBA, the construction material not be included.
So the women owners. What is the women's construction owners? President is sitting right here in Chicago. And she said that they recommended that materials not be included in those contracts. Not counted in the contracts.
Thanks. The next question I have is, what if I'm not included in the NACE codes? My industry isn't included in this recent proposed rule. Is there anything I can do? Is there anything, or what should I do?
The NAICS codes were decided on a disparity study, which was called the RAND study. And that was in 2000, I think that was completed in 2002 or 2003. That's how those were determined. And so in order to get your NAICS code, if it's not included in the program, you need to get that included in the next disparity study. And SBA has already mentioned that their data is old. I mean, they're operating from old data. They want to do another study fairly soon. It needs to be updated, and that's the place where additional NAICS codes will be included. That shouldn't stop you from talking about it, though. Assemble your, you know, you can do some market research. You can work through your associations. You can make a case for it, and you can make a case to the SBA. You can make a case to your elected officials about why it ought to be included. It shouldn't stop you from starting the process and the drumbeat for inclusion in the program. But right now, if it's not included, you're kind of, you can't participate in the program.
Thank you. I have another question here. Do you know if how many contracts will potentially be part of this program? Is there a number that they announce, or do they just...
It's unlimited. There are no amount of contracts. There's no limit on the amount of contracts that contracting officers across the federal agencies can set aside for this program.
Great.
So it's up to all of us to continue the drumbeat to really make them use this program as an effective tool for women business owners.
The emails are streaming in as I speak right now. Are there any set-asides in the women's procurement program?
Yes, that's the point of the whole program, is that it is a set-aside for only women-owned businesses to bid on. Angeline has a hard job. It's really hard to walk and talk at the same time, like trying to read emails and ask questions. So, Angeline, good for you.
Thanks, Anne.
I've been in that position before.
I do have a question that was asking for a copy of the NACE codes, and I can go ahead and answer that. The copy of the NACE codes are posted on our WIP website in the summary of the Women's Procurement Rule. I lay out all of the NACE codes that are eligible, and I do distinguish between the economic or the substantially underrepresented, which does not need the economic disadvantage requirement, and then the other, which are found to be underrepresented, which does require that finding.
And while you're doing that, I just want to say that this will also give women a real opportunity to be the primes with respect to their contracts, because they now have an advantage that a small business generally doesn't have, or even a larger business. So it's designed to give you an advantage to be a prime rather than a sub.
I have another question here, and this is actually regarding what's going on in the Gulf area with the oil spill. If I have a service useful for the cleanup, how should I proceed?
FEMA is in charge of those kinds of disaster cleanups. FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and that sits under the Department of Homeland Security umbrella. In addition, the Department of the Interior will be heavily involved in it, and so will the Environmental Protection Agency. If you have emergency services, you should be thinking about going to FEMA and taking a look at what sorts of things they're looking for. EPA is probably secondary, and Interior is probably number three.
Thank you. Another question here is, you had mentioned that you would like, WIP had advocated for lifting or increasing the contract size limits. Is I have a statement and question here that says, what about the net worth? Do you think that the economic disadvantage requirements should also be increased?
This part of the program ties directly into other economic disadvantage programs that the government has in place, like the 8A program. And so I do not think that it's realistic to believe that that will be changed unless the other economic disadvantage programs are changed as well in terms of the threshold, the net worth. It's going to track the 8A program. The 8A program and the net worth requirements is undergoing a review, and it's quite possible that those are going to be increased just because they haven't been increased since 1989. So there's a possibility that this will be changed to reflect any change in the 8A program with respect to economic disadvantage, but there will not be a major push to vastly increase the net worth limit.
Another question here is, where can we search for these contracts once the program is in place? Will they post it at a central website, or will we have to track them down on the various through the various agencies?
Well, it'll be just like any other federal contract. Most of the notifications go out through the through FedBizOps or the agency's individual websites. Most of it's public record, and this will certainly be public record as well. But then we can go into a whole strategy about how you find those contracts early, how you work with the agencies to set aside contracts in your program area, which is a federal strategy that bears further discussion. But it will be public record, and you will be able to view them on FedBizOps for the most part.
Have a question here. What if an agency is still not meeting its goals? What will happen to them? Is there any way that this program affects that? So
there will be a much more pressure on the agencies that are not meeting their woman-owned goals to start using this program in full force. And we fully intend to bring that to their attention at any time, point in time, early and often, let me put it that way. So we want to make sure that now that they have a vehicle, a contracting mechanism to set aside contracts for women to bid on, only to bid on, we want to make sure they use it. So it will require vigilance on all of our parts. SBA has a scorecard, an annual scorecard, where you can very easily see which agencies are meeting their goals, their woman-owned goals, and which ones are not. So it's public record, and we should, if you're an individual woman business owner, that will certainly empower you to go to the agency that you're trying to contract with and suggesting that they use this program for some of your services and goods.
I have another question here. Is
we'll talk afterwards. Go ahead.
Okay. What are there any plans for the federal acquisition regulations? Are there any? Are they mirroring each other? Is there any changes going to happen to implement this rule?
Well, this will be part of the FAR.
Okay.
This will become part of the FAR.
I'm having a question here. Do you know when that will occur, or is
somebody doesn't have their phone on mute, so it's a little tough to hear you. You want to repeat that?
Okay. The question here in the WIP office is, do you know when that will occur?
When the program is finalized.
Okay. And still more questions filtering in.
I have a question from Chicago, which is 85% of the women-owned construction companies are subcontractors or second tier, as they're known. Will the program expand to subcontracting or the second tier? The answer is, that's something we ought to be pushing for, but not currently.
Okay, and then we have one last question. That we have time for. I apologize to all that have submitted questions that we weren't able to get to. But I will email you the answers to those questions, and I will ask Anne for the answers if I do not know the answers to that. And so the last question is a rough estimate of the timing of this program. I know you had mentioned that you hope in December that the final rule will be published. Does that mean that once it's published, it's ready to go right away, or is there still a lag that still needs to be finalized, such as
okay.
Are there any internal rules? Or
okay, so you're asking about the process. So the process is a program is proposed, which is what happened in March. Then there is a 30 or 60 day comment period, which has now ended. That ended in May. That's when they collect all the comments. Then they analyze all the comments, and they put a final rule out for a 30-day additional review. That's usually how it works. After that, they publish the final rule, which is the final program. And what I said was not December. I said the last quarter of this calendar year. So last quarter is, October through December. So once the program is once the final rule has been published, that's the program, and that's when it kicks in. It kicks in immediately.
Thank you, Anne. And
welcome.
Thank you so much for that wonderful Q&A. I apologize again to the people we were not able to get to answer your questions over the phone. But I will be able to answer those via email, and I still encourage you, if there are questions that occur to you after this call or any time, please go ahead and email those questions at questions@wip.org, and I will try to answer those as soon as I can. And so now I'm going to turn this over to my colleague, Oriana Camacho. She is our grassroots coordinator here at WIP, and she will go ahead and take over from here.
Hi, everyone. My name is Oriana Camacho, and as Angeline said, I handle WIPP's advocacy and outreach programs. I wanted to make a couple of exciting announcements. As far as WIPP's programs that we currently have, yesterday, WIPP is proud to have launched the Entrepreneurs Energy and Environment Program to educate women business owners on how energy and environment issues affect business and the opportunities they present. For more information, I highly suggest that you go to entrepreneursandenergy.com. As far as events that we have coming up, on May 26th, WIPP will be in Los Angeles, California for a Give Me 5 Introduction to Federal Contracting event. On June 15th, WIPP will present healthcare policy trends and opportunities in San Francisco, California. Additionally, our WIPP annual conference for 2010 will be September 27th through 29th in Washington, D.C. For all events, go to the WIPP website at WIPP.org, and there's an events tab on the left-hand side of the WIPP homepage. We will post notes from this call on the website together with information on our next meeting for the Instant Impact Team program. Those teams that are holding in-person meetings now, go ahead and continue with the discussion at your location, and we thank everyone for participating on this call. We look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Bye.